Good bloody evening. How the devil are we? Yes, it's Friday. Hallelujah. It's the alcohol show, and today's liquor of choice, I'm just gonna stick to Jaeger today. I'm not gonna have that much, because getting the bottle out of the freezer and, oops. You know, you drink so much of stuff sometimes, you just don't realise how quick the bottle goes down. Ho-hum. Never mind. I hope you're all having a great Friday. The time is just after 7 p.m. here in the UK, which means it's just after 2 p.m. along the east coast of America. Thank you so much to everyone who is hanging out. And if you are hanging out and are not working, I do so hope you've got your alcohol. What a show I have lined up for you today. Well, it's not just me, as many of you are well aware. If you've seen me and listened to me, you'll be sick of the sound of me telling you that I've got a show planned with Seven Webster. Yes. Oh my God. Yay. So, I'm not going to tell you too much about it now, because what we're going to do today, basically Seven has put the show together, more or less. I gave him choice of music. See, how often do I do that? How often do I allow people to choose the music that's going to be on my show? A little bit, but never the whole show. So, I have to say, he's a lucky dude. But I was honoured, absolutely honoured, to give up my time to share it with this guy, because he is a god in the music industry over here in the UK. And I don't say that lightheartedly at all, because he's got a wealth of experience over many genres, and he's down to earth, which is the most important thing. So what we're going to do, because obviously his time is so busy, and mine has been this week, horrendously so, we've had to record bits over a few days, and basically, I think I've managed to get it together to do this. How cool is this? Oh yeah. So what we're going to start off with is me talking to Seven about Seven. So for those of you that don't know him, you can get a feel for who he is, what he does, and why, you know, he is the person he is, really, in the music industry, because he has the experience, etc, etc. Then, like I say, he has given me a playlist, which I have, surprisingly enough. And he's also been very, very kind, and he's given us a few literally hot off out of the studio tunes, which I can play a part of. So I've got to remember, and I've been drumming it into myself all day, talk over the end of the song, talk over the end of the song. So if anybody notices I'm not doing it, for God's sake, kick me, please, and hard. No, I promise I'll do it. I'm that fixated on it, honestly. So I've got my first Jaeger ready to go. I hope you've got your alcohol of choice for the show. Without further ado, I think it's time for me to play a couple of IDs, and then we will go straight in to the interview I did with Seven Webster. So sit back, enjoy, and pin your ears back, people. This is Infernal Rock Radio, station built by the bands for the fans. I want to give a shout out to WFLM Radio, who are also syndicated out to you today. Thank you for tuning in, Pam and everybody over there. But it's all about Infernal Rock Radio, so let's get on with the tunes, turn it up, and enjoy, folks. And basically we say, Seven, thank you very much for giving up your valuable time. And I know we're pre-recording a bit of this, but it is because both of us, especially you in the music industry, are so busy on the, especially Friday evenings. So thank you very much for giving up your time basically in the week to do this with me.
My pleasure.
Okay, so for those people that have had their heads absolutely buried in sand, you are Seven Webster. You are from 7pm Management, is that correct?
That's correct.
How did you get into the music industry, Seven?
Good question. My brother-in-law was David Bowie's guitarist.
Right.
So that's probably not a bad start. In all honesty, my father took me into a record shop, and, you know, I didn't know what a record was. I was 9 years old. He said, look, you can choose something. I went to the guy at the counter, what's good? He said, look, this is just coming out. It's an album called Electric Warrior by a guy called Mark Bolan T-Rex. I took the guy's advice. I waltzed home with this record. I stuck it on, and it changed my life.
How grateful are you that he didn't say Al Kabelk or something like that?
No, but that would have changed my life. I'd probably become a plumber. as it is, but what can I say? Immediately I got home. My mother was kind of doing bed and breakfast at the time.
Oh no!
All these kind of we had lots of art students who lived with us.
Oh, handy.
And when I walked in with this album, I became someone worth talking to, and as opposed to the little brat, immediately they said, "Have you heard this? You know, this is Jimi Hendrix Experience, and this is whatever the Who," and so immediately they said, "Can we borrow your album?" And we were off, And I then the journey started, and my sister started dating a guy called Mick Wayne, who was in a band called Junior's Eyes. Mick had been in a band called The Outsiders with Jimmy Page, and then from the Junior's Eyes with Rick Wayman on keyboards, and then the Junior's Eyes became David Bowie's backing band, and Mick played guitar on the wonderful Space Oddity for the Grand Summer 50, which is, his wonderful lead break in the middle that, I guess everyone associates Bowie with the Spiders and What Fired, but I thought, that period for me was hugely influential for me, and that solo was, certainly still, means a great deal to me. And then obviously he went into bands like the Pink Fairies and all sorts of mad and bonkers bands. But, him and Paige encouraged each other to go out and do sessions, and, I think played on Carolina on My Mind for James Taylor and all sorts of people, all of which I think the average rate was about £7.50 at the time. So a lot of £7.50 fees for playing a lot of classic guitar parts on a lot of great records. I'd always said, Stephen, whatever you do, if you're working in music, don't go out and do the session thing. I obviously picked up a guitar and started playing it badly, and my kind of journey started there, and it didn't really stop,
You mentioned that you started off with the great classics such as The Who and stuff. Now, you're not all rock, are you? You are quite well known in other genres.
I think the thing was, I was signed as an artist. I signed to all sorts of dodgy little record deals and toured as a gigging guitarist for about 15 years. So I'm not completely, obviously predominantly as a gigging guitarist, it was always doing my own thing. I was, I signed to Chrysalis Records doing my own thing.
Right.
I signed to Universal, or what was Polygram Music at the time, as a songwriter. I did his range, and I signed to, at the same time, I signed to little labels called Criminal Damage Records in Reading,
with
kind of more gothy rock thrash Stooges style band, which is a personal love, Iggy still gets me up in the morning. But I guess kind of moving on from that, I got to a point where I got hit with an enormous tax bill, and I put in gigs for two years, sort of going forward for 2 years, and gigged for 2 years to literally pay the tax man. The sort of tax man taketh away pretty much most of my equipment, and I thought, there had to be an easier route here. This is rubbish. And actually, through being badly managed, I realised that, I could do these things myself. And I was offered some great gigs as a guitarist and some really interesting things, but I figured that actually I wasn't too bad at launching and helping other people's careers. I'd already helped a few people have some success. I'd already launched magazines and club nights and all sorts of things and small businesses left, right and centre, and given quite a lot of people a kickstart. So I thought I should do this properly, or it was up until that point in my life, all I wanted to do was write songs and be an artist, really.
Do you still write any songs at all?
I'd write all the time, that's not to say I've, written multi-million selling records, because unfortunately it's not down to the records that you write sometimes. If EMI buys Chrysalis, it's got nothing to do with music,
No.
The same way that, whoever's bought EMI at the moment, it's kind of, for an artist signed to it, it can affect your career, and it's got more to do with whether that person's made any money. Now, if that person hasn't put a record out, of course they haven't made any money. So they just look at a balance sheet and go, well, that's not working, and unfortunately that's what happened. But, I did have one song went on to German radio and became you know, being called Seven and christened Seven, you know, my mother's lucky number. I kind of figured that in order to, you know, to go about anything, you kind of, especially working in music, don't sit there and wait to be lucky. Get out there and make it happen. And that's probably more true now of the modern industry than ever before. It's saying I can do this and really sort of stepping into it and going for it. And passing that belief on to others. So I guess at that time that's what that was about. I had a sit down with a good friend called Pete McCarthy, who basically found a band called Southern Death Cult, who became The Cult. And the PM of Pete McCarthy was a kind of inspiration, and I thought, what am I going to call my company? I can't be, don't want to think too hard, and thinking 7P for publishing, M for management, and P for Peter and M for McCarthy. Yeah, my inspiration at the time, yeah, Peter's absolutely bonkers, but again, a great finder of talent, great, one of those people that could get people interested in anything that he fell in love with because his enthusiasm was so great, and still a great friend, and you know, launched many careers at the side of The Cult. So really, that was where that was born. And Pete had said, "Look, Seven, why go out and get another publishing deal? This is daft. Why don't you just set yourself up as, you know, yourself and be, you know, get yourself a publishing company and get someone to fund it and back it?" And I thought, yeah. That's a good idea. I thought that's the first good idea you've had. So I then went and chatted to China Records, which is home to the acts like the Levelers and those bands, and you know, suggested that they give me some money, and I start publishing through them, and that's exactly what we did. I guess I also produced some demos at the time for a band called Sensor, who also went on to have quite a good career.
Sensor, haven't they just got a new album coming out?
I think they have, actually, yeah. It's the kind of, you know, rock rap. No.
yeah, How to Do Battle. I've got the promo here, in fact.
So there we are. We could play it. I'd be interested to hear it. you know, I produced their very first demos.
Did you, really?
And at the time, I took them out, and they said, "Seven, we'd love you to manage us, but we want you to do it for this very small percentage, and we want you to do it and work alongside the mother of one of them, their best mate, and, you know, their dog, really." And it was like, you know what, I'm off on holiday, thank you, but no thank you. And when I came back, the companies that I'd taken the demos of Centre to said, would I go and work for them? And again, that inspired more conversations. I had Chrysalis Music say, well, why don't I set a sub-publishing company up with them? And, you know, it was nice. You know, I'd realised that, actually, why would I have wanted to have signed another publishing deal when I could have my own funded company and be the master of my own destiny? So it was a lot better.
Absolutely. It's not just a lot better for you, but, like, you know, the artists that are up and coming and that you give your time to, you've actually been in the business and you've been around the business for a long time, and you've probably seen so many changes.
Yeah, it's now changing at such a fast speed. You know, it really is Klingon, because it's ludicrously fun, but it's, you know, it's like an extreme sport being in the music industry at the moment.
It's hard. There's not a lot of new acts breaking through.
You see, it depends. I think that breaking through and the whole kind of idea of it, everything's changed. It used to be that you would project a record into a chart, and now really the chart, you know, from my perspective, it's not worth more than toilet paper. You know, it really doesn't mean anything to me anymore.
Well, no, not myself. I mean, I remember growing up when the charts were, I mean, everybody stopped to watch Top of the Pops.
Yeah, and then, you know, it got taken over and Andy Peters got involved and killed and dead, and quite frankly, you should be shot for it. But, you know, nice and brutal, but it was terrible. It was terrible what he did to it. And it's kind of yes men in jobs like that, you know, it's very depressing, you know, because, you know, it's very hard for them to put it straight again, and that was the focal point. Whereas after the second that went, it just became a chart presented by two people on Radio 1 at a given time, which, you know, it happens to be quite often on a Sunday night when people are driving back from somewhere, but it's, you know, it's lost its fun.
Well, yeah, it certainly has, and it, you know, again, for the older people looking, and we remember when it was real and proper.
Yeah, well, it's now, I mean, it used to be the sort of work the record to release the record, whereas now, you know, without sounding too corporate, it is about, you know, it's the DIY era, and it's more about a band going out there and doing it for themselves and building their business and building their brand, and you know, and all the rules of that are very different. And the old school industry, it's still there, but it only gets interested when someone builds their brand. You know, builds their brand. It'll still sign the odd pop artist because they have to stay in jobs and justify wages. But it's not an area that I'd want to be in. So it has shaped what I've done quite dramatically. But you know, I've wanted that to happen. I wouldn't want to be in the bit that kind of, you know, broken off and withered away. I wanted to be right smack in the pulse of the current modern music industry, really.
Well, absolutely. I was just looking, you know, Dido, you've worked with people such as Dido in the past, is that correct?
Yep. Don't hold it against me, but in fairness, you know, after I kind of hung my guitar up, I didn't kind of go, right, I've got to go and manage. I wanted to look well with something different, and at the time I was promoting at the Marquee in Wardour Street, and I was doing a new night there, and I called something like Scoop or something, I think it was called. Sounds like picking up dog poo, but and I remember them saying scooping up seven scoops up the bands, and we'd put like five different bands on in a night once a month, and I'd have whoever involved in the NME at the time and whoever else. And you know, I was writing reviews for Teletext, which was hilarious. 70-word sort of reviews, and looking for something to inspire, because I thought actually at the time everyone wanted to be the Rolling Stones, and everything started to sound exactly the same.
Yeah.
And I found it very, very boring.
I remember that era. Yes.
It was. You know, there were the good bands like the Choir Boys or those kind of bands, and then there were bands that wanted to be those bands that were terrible, and you know, it just got so samey. And I remember getting thousands of, I mean, like sacks of cassette tapes of bands that sounded like the Stones, but really badly recorded, that couldn't play very well, and myself and Peter McCarthy going through them, and the A&R guy from Fiction Records, Chris Parry's label, and we wade through these stacks of music, just looking for something, and Censor was one of the few that was interesting, which is why I produced it. And I got really bored looking for these things, and then a producer that I'd worked on as an artist called Tom Fredericks said, "Why, you know, I'm working with this young DJ. Why don't you come up and have a blast of that? Blast of what he's up to." And Tom had been working with the Eurythmics and all sorts of random stuff, and I went in the studio and I thought, hey, this is different. And there's, you know, this young kid called Sasha, and that was it. I thought this was thoroughly different, and I knew nothing about dance music. I just knew that what he was doing was interesting and innovative at a time where everything else was very uninteresting and derivative. So it was kind of a really fun era, and I started working with them and helping them, and kind of grew into that. I mean, that was the first career that I really started managing, and I guess, you know, for my sins, I became the sort of champion of superstar DJ culture without intending to, because all I did was apply the rules that I'd learned of rock music and gigging and working as a rock act into the career of this young DJ. And then when you have success with something, everything else in that area then knocks on your door. So I had thousands of DJs knocking on my door, which was fine, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do, and I wanted to get back to trying to make proper records.
Do you find you got pigeonholed? People do get pigeonholed, don't they?
Well, you do. Whatever success you have, you know, it's very easy to just do that, and a lot of people are very happy doing that, but to me that would be like working on the Teddy Boy movement, you know, 50 years on. I wouldn't want to do that. You know, music evolves and goes forwards. There might be the odd exception. But, you know, I had a great time working at that time, and it was very exciting, and it was nice to work one minute with thrashing guitars and being the goth rocker nutter that I was, to then, you know, being the kind of manager of the superstar DJ here, managing Sasha, John Digweed, Carl Cox, which is quite good fun. And then,
yeah,
you know, taking taking it out all over the world, touring it, packaging it, breaking as many rules as I could with it, having fun with it, and to a point where, you know what, I wasn't enjoying it, and I couldn't get Sasha on a plane. He'd become as bad as, you know, it's probably like managing Keith Moon, you know, he missed every flight in a year bar two. And at that point, you know, when you're flying someone three days a week and you've got six people working, you're trying to get them on a plane, you think, well, there's easier ways to go about doing it. And I wanted to get back to kind of making records, heartfelt albums. And I found this sort of slightly chubby, depressing girl and started working with her. And that was, you know, and that was Dido. And that was kind of good fun, really.
So, I mean, whatever people think, she's got an amazing voice, there's no denying.
It's different. The world has gone pop, and I guess, and for me, I thought this was different, and that was inspiring. And I think, you know, the whole thing is to go in a different direction to everybody else, you know, to find your own, to do things that are innovative and different is always my way. And, you know, if everything wanted to sound like, you know, pub rock, really, which is the era I was talking about before, you know, dance music was exciting. It, you know, it was as punk as punk was to me when progressive rock became bland. And I think that, you know, to watch that happen was very exciting. And to sit there with the head of Warner's and have them say, Seven, this will never happen, and then go out and have major success with it globally was great. And the same thing, you know, with Dido, I marched around, got 170-odd record labels and played them Here With Me in the same version that went into Roswell. And you know, none of them got it, apart from Lucy, and funny enough, who had signed me, who said that he'd give me a singles deal on it. And then finally I signed it to Warner Chappells. I wanted to sign it to my own company, and Sony, who were my then publishing partner, said, this will never happen, and da-da-da, and, you know, that sort of, the usual story, and kind of, you know, but that's it. You have to be headstrong, you have to believe in what you're selling. We believe in it. If you're an artist in a band, you've got to believe in yourself, and if you're a manager selling a band, you've got to believe in that artist. So,
well, absolutely, there's no point in trying to sell a product if you don't believe in it.
Exactly. And for me, that was, you know, everything was about sort of instantaneous girly pop, the start of the Britney era, and Dido was absolutely the opposite of that. So it kind of worked, you know. All they were interested in was sort of 16-year-old girls with sort of drama school kind of backgrounds and voices that could sing, you know, in a straight kind of way with perfect pitch. But they didn't really go for something that was someone that wasn't that, you know, might not be in tune. And I don't mean that negatively. I mean it's flaunting the difference, really. And for me, it's that.
Yeah.
It's the things that you look at, you know, it's why Led Zeppelin had kind of planes flying over and some of their recordings and randomness, you know, it's all the little things that make it what it is. And for me, that's what Dido had and that album had. And, you know, the guts of the first album were heart and soul me, really. With, you know, I put it together with a guy called Paul Statham, who had been the keyboard player in my band for a bit, and he co-wrote Here With Me with her, so that was where that one came from. And I also put her together with some other random people that I'd worked with, and, you know, I was also managing producers and having a lot of success with them as well. So but managing producers doesn't attract, you know, a huge queue of producers. It's just something that's very behind the scenes and nice, you know, nice to do.
Do you think it helps to run the music, or do you think it helps you to run your music industry business as a business? Because what I see looking in a lot of the time is people get emotionally involved in the music industry and don't tend to run it like a business, and that's when you start having downfalls.
I've had some downfalls, you know, without downs, the ups don't look as good. And I've, you know, having a lot of friends in music that have similarly had downfalls, you know, you kind of, you watch them bounce back and you inspire each other. I think that, you know, all of it is, you know, management's about learning. And unfortunately, when things go right, you don't learn as much as when they go wrong.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And that's something I instill when I train managers. You always learn from your bad mistakes or the things that go wrong.
Well, and my career had gone pretty wrong with Chrysalis and corporate takeover, and not through any fault of music. So, you know, that was my grounding in it. And I think that, you know, since then, you know, most of the other things that I've learned, you know, I've grown companies up and, you know, made all sorts of decisions based on, you know, you make decisions, which is what a manager does, and some are going to be right and some are going to be wrong. And, you know, you try and make less wrong ones as you go, and learn your business. And, you know, obviously management tends to have a sort of set time in which it runs. You know, you're going into a very long-term business. It's like taking on an artist, like getting married.
Oh, God, fair dues to you.
it's totally like that, because you're not going in for 5 minutes. You're going in for 7 years or 8 years. If you're going in and trying to take something on to manage it for a year, it's not going to work, you know. It's going to take...
No, it is a long-term commitment, like you say.
You can't, and there are people that just jump into things. I can't do that. I have to get to know the person, because it's a people business, and then see and get to know that they're going to work a damn sight harder than I am at their own career. And if that's the case, then you know, life becomes much more fun. So,
do you still get loads of requests, or even more requests now you've got your own management and promotion?
Well, I kind of started 7 p.m. right then, I've managed, I guess, probably over 40 top 40 artists when chart positions meant anything. And now, I mean, a huge amount in dance through that period. I obviously had lots of singer-songwriters come to me after Dido started to become successful. Then I kind of, obviously, again, that went away from me through no fault of my own, really. And then, you know, I wanted to, there are other areas and things that I wanted to do and work in, and similarly in the breaks in between managing careers, I used to go out and then consult for other people just for head clearance. So sometimes it's just nice to do a job and be paid for it, you know,
like
a few shelves.
Well, why not? As long as the money's coming in, who cares?
Well, you know, it's just nice to do, and I was kind of fortunate, I don't want too many people on this rock show to switch off when you mention these names like Dido or, you know, whichever, but, you know, there's a passion which goes right back to, you know, to when I was nine, which has grown out of rock music, obviously, and that's where I'm, you know, I'm very comfortable with rock music, but I find that music kind of marries with different moods throughout the course of the day. And
I agree, and I know a lot of my listeners will probably be spinning on their heads when I admit that, you know, as much as I love my rock and metal and it is my number one, I do listen to a lot of other genres.
I'd get very bored without all the other genres of music, and for me it's that hodgepodge when it comes together and it's all twisted around in an interesting new soup is when it excites me, and that's when I listen to Rammstein and I get excited.
Yeah, now they are super popular.
You know what? There are things when you hear certain, the production is just mind-blowingly good, and you know, I don't know what they're singing about, and I don't care. I just enjoy it. You know,
yeah.
Put that one in my car, and I can get arrested, which is good. Well, so you kind of. I like things that are edgy, but then, you know, but there are going to be other moods and moments, you know, whereas I'm as a sucker to listen to some chill out music on a hot day on a beach, you know, with the sun setting or, you know, whatever. It's driving across France listening to something completely different. It doesn't really matter. It's when those things connect that kind of, you know, that it touches you and it's the right music at the right time.
I think you hit it on the head when you said music is an emotion, and I think it is. Music is a complete emotion.
Yeah, for me, it's one of those things, you know. It is the soundtrack to my life. I know that that gets said these days, and people would look at it as corny. I said it to Barbara Streisand once, and she said, "That's so moving." And I guess, I don't know how I ended up having an evening out where I ended up chatting the night with Barbara Streisand, but you know, those things are, you know, I mean, that's the privilege. You don't know where music's going to take you or what's going to happen or where you're going to end up, but you know, you have that thing in common. I think proper musicians of any walk really have that, you know, have that in them. I just love guitar. You know, I'm a huge guitarist fan. I've grown up around every form of guitars, and you know, and still I get energized by guitars. If you put on early Patti Smith records or Iggy Pop records or things like that, I absolutely, you know, get inspired by. And at the same time, I get inspired by, you know, I got inspired probably by one of the best gigs I'd ever been to was Led Zeppelin at Nebworth back in the day. And again, life-changing, really.
I'm sure we'll hear some of those tunes throughout the show when you send me your playlist. I can't wait. I love stuff like that myself. So what about now? And I don't want to dwell, because we are going to talk a little bit later on in the show about your main sort of focus band for the rock industry at the moment. But who have you got on your roster at the moment?
My roster sort of shrunk, really, because, you know, to manage something when record sales have hit where they've hit, you know, to have a percentage of that really isn't very exciting. You know, I've had top 10 records and made enough for lunch out of them, you know, and that doesn't really mean a lot. So to manage something now, it has to be something that you, A, have passion and belief more so than ever, but also has got to be absolutely show-stoppingly good live. And because I kind of drifted heavily into publishing almost as a major thrust for about 6 years. Just again, I got taken on a different journey, and I thought that there was a space for someone to be more proactive with the use of music into film and television, probably at a time where a lot of other people didn't realise its power. And so I was, you know, again, lucky enough to grow and work on my own little company, which is independently funded, that focused heavily in those areas. After I put bits of music into things like Trainspotting, so kind of in the last 3 years, I kind of come out of that again and gone back to where I started, but in a slightly more modern way, which is again working in aspects of the contemporary music industry. I don't believe that you can manage a lot and do it well unless you have a huge team. So I tend to do one or two things at a time.
You're still a small team at 7 PM.
I've stripped it literally back down to myself, and I have a couple of co-management people that I work with on things that I like, because I like working with other people, but, you know, I don't really want a mass office with tons and tons of people.
At that point, I think you lose touch, like you say, and you lose the belief because you haven't got the time to put 100% into that artist if you get too big.
Yeah, you can do it, but then it's maintaining it. Plus, you know, at the end of the day, I've had enormous rosters with lots of success, but kind of making about the same with about 10 times the grief and the headache. And, you know, and that for me isn't, you know, my main thing is managing my son, i.e. not managing him, but looking after my 2.5-year-old son, who's the best thing in my life. And other than that, you know, my other management roster is a producer called Paul Titler, who produced the likes of Placebo and the Charlatans and lots of modern contemporary kind of, he's very good at capturing kind of live energy, so very raw live. So I've worked with Paul. And then on the kind of band front, Skindred is my obviously main thrust. And outside of that, I also look after an electro kind of DJ called Mason. So they're all very different. Mason's,
aren't they, just?
Mason's got a new single with Run DMC, or with DMC of Run DMC. So he's got that going on at the moment. And Sam Sparrow. So it's about as completely removed from the rock world. But again,
I bet it keeps you interested, though, because it is so different.
It is, but then the connection with that, you know, if I hadn't have gone to see Aerosmith in Hyde Park, and I was managing a female rock band at the time called McQueen, who supported Aerosmith there, and I took them to Hyde Park, and we got chatting to DMC, and you know what, that's where that came about. And then, you know, you stay chatting to someone, you say, well, why don't we do something together, and the next thing, you know, a record happens. And I love making records, and I love going, you should try this, and you should do that, and why don't we try it? And, you know, people get on, try these things out and make them happen. Two sparks to create a flame.
Absolutely.
And kind of, I guess, Skindred is a passion, really. I kind of have loved the band for a very long time, and I'd had the conversation, and they've basically been primarily worked in America, and it was something that, you know, for me, it was everything that we talked about with Rammstein just now. It's an exciting, vibrant band that, you know, crosses musical genres and has its own space, and I think they're a very important band. So
absolutely, but let's talk more about them later in the show.
Okay. Right, and now you can introduce the next record.
I just want to ask you, though, before we stop talking about you, really, FM radio and internet radio.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
Now, that's good. I'm kind of... I love the fact that there's choice of radio now, much more so. To be honest, it doesn't bother me so much the format as a, you know, what bothers me is the music. You know, I just
right.
I want music that I can turn on and not want to turn off.
Absolutely.
And you know, on a lot of FM radio, there isn't that. There's a few shows and a few bits. Rock music, as we know, is very marginalised. You know, it's
very, very.
You know, you have 1 hour on our national station, and a little bit more on London station, and then some regional stations that are doing good. You know, probably my favourite station playing rock music was Indie 103 in LA, because I just loved that station. I thought it was kind of vibrant and exciting, and listening to Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols would just crack me up. I just absolutely loved it. I'd get to LA, turn that on, and feel at home, you know. Just completely bonkers. Apart from that, where do I go to listen to radio? Because I listen to so much new music, most of the time listening to radio tends to be in the car, so unfortunately it's what I'm limited to, isn't it?
We need internet radio in the car then, don't we?
I know, it's going to happen soon though.
I mean, I'm sure it will. But I mean, you know, the one thing about internet radio, no matter what people say, because it has its good points as it has its bad points, it's a chance for artists to get their music out all over the world now.
Definitely. I mean, most of the acts that I've worked with, you know, if I'd worked solely in the UK, we'd never have gone anywhere. Most of it is about building a story. And if you're not, you know, most UK record labels would be aiming their stuff solely at the one ego at Radio 1 that would decide whether their record would get played or not. Whereas my view was always about, you know, why would I want to do that? I can take a record of a new band to America and mail it out to, you know, 50 rock radio stations overnight. McQueen, we did that with, and, you know, I think they said that they were the most played unsigned act in America, whatever that meant at the time. And that was great, you know. I just thought it was brilliant that we could be played on all of these stations and have all of this traction. You know, it really meant that I didn't need to worry too much about... that's not to say I didn't worry about the UK, I just didn't have to worry about whether we were played on national radio in the UK. And in fact, a lot of opportunities for that band came off the back of being on US radio, which got them on shows with the Foo Fighters in Europe. So, you know, and Juliette Lewis and the Licks tours and stuff.
Hmm.
You know, it was great and exciting.
Amazing. Right, I think, like you said before, we'll have some tunes. Thank you for that in-depth look at yourself.
Oh, yeah, specialist subject.
Everybody's got their own specialist subject about themselves, but at least everybody knows who you are now, for those that have had their heads buried in sand.
Well, I don't know whether being me is a good thing or a bad thing, I just enjoy it, you know.
Well, it's working, and it's certainly, you know... people like you don't often give up their time to help these unsigned acts and such on internet radio, so that alone will stand you in good stead. Do you know what I mean?
You've got to, you know, it's a bit, you've got to pass it on, and you've got to put back, and you've got to support, and that's hugely important in what we do. It does become a problem when you're trying to give time to your family and other things sometimes, and you've got, you know, I'd spend almost every weekend just trawling through new music and you know, answering emails as to hundreds of new bands, you know, you have to have some deterrence. Unfortunately, I think the sort of MySpace era has made that a bit easier, because you can listen to something. If it's Johnny No Mates and no one likes it, they tend to be pretty honest. Their fans tend to be pretty honest about it.
Yeah, they can be brutal, absolutely brutal.
You know, I think that's hugely helpful. Plus, you know, if it sounds good, one good track on a MySpace, I've seen generate, you know, a wave of activity globally.
Absolutely. So let's hope we can help people.
Exactly. So that's the, you know, that's the plan and the point.
Okay, Seven. Well, we're going to play some tunes, and no doubt we shall be back after a few tunes.
After a few drinks. The alcohol show.
Well, he's done his research.
Exactly.
We'll be right back.
Okay,
Seven. My aphemia. What was your thoughts on that? And can I just clarify that? I've just emailed you the things. This is all your decision, because obviously I know some of the bands, and I didn't want anybody to think I'd influenced you at all. I literally sent you the people that had sent us their MySpace link for you to listen to.
Absolutely. For me, it's kind of just wading through links and having a blast and trying to find something that, you know, hits the spot or stands apart. And I think, you know, Aphemia being the first one that we're going to plucked out. For me, the obvious reasons that make it and things that make it stand out are it's a little bit different. You know, it's a bit more, it's kind of got a modern edge to it, which I'm all for. While I love classic guitarists, and it's also nice to hear things which have a modern twist and a modern edge, and I think that's particularly what made this act stand out. It's innovative. The vocals are good. It kind of kicks in with, you know, sort of pounding kick drums, and it's all guns are blazing, but it's got a modern and sort of 2009 sound, which is, you know, always something that's going to inspire.
What kind of advice could you give them of what to do next in the industry, maybe?
I think with all rock music, you know, you're not really going to go marching onto the Radio 1 playlist, because if we only, you know, rock music's only kind of got its kind of 1 hour of national radio, and it's you know, thanks to stations like yourself playing and supporting it. Really, you know, that's a bonus, but most of it is going to be about the live show. And for me, you know, something like Aphemia, and it's probably, I'm going to probably repeat myself with other rock acts that we play, it's all about the live show. If the live show's great, then they're off and running. What the band has to do is work their ass off getting more shows and doing more. You know, kind of, that's the bit on their, looking at their kind of MySpace, there aren't shows, and you know, I think they got one or something, or, you know, it's not enough, you know.
So the key to getting yourself out there and known is pushing the live shows, because I mean, I'm always saying that, because anybody can make a CD and anybody can sound good on a CD, I think.
Yeah, you can always get someone to Jimmy Page to come in and play it for play on it for you. No, the reality is, you've got to get out there and do it. You've got to. I mean, a band isn't just, as you're saying, a CD. It's a living, breathing entity that communicates with fans. And a band is also a brand. And its brand, if it only means anything to two people, of course, it's not going to move forwards. Whereas, if you're a band like AC/DC that have had, you know, 30 years or, you know, of touring and gigging that brand and building it and looking after your fans and growing it, you know, of course, that's the pinnacle of what a rock band can do. And for new bands starting out, it's not a case of go find a manager and try and get them to do it. A manager's only ever going to get interested if a band is going to work really bloody hard. You know, a manager wants a band that's going to work 5 times harder than them, and, you know, so therefore a band with one gig, unfortunately, is the downside.
Yeah.
Because it isn't going to inspire an agent, it isn't going to inspire a manager. So while the music is great with this band, the bit that's letting it down is the sheer lack of activity.
So basically, go out there, get some live gigs, and get more people interested.
Yeah, I mean, the MySpace page is a shop window to the world. It's accessible from the world, and there's a huge amount of rock fans around the world. So, you know, it's not hard for them to communicate with, you know, other like-minded bands. And, you know, there is a network of places that they can play, and probably building outside of their area. I mean, they're from, looking at MySpace again, it's saying Notts and Derby. I mean, it's got so much kind of rock infrastructure and, you know, and great venues in that area, that to be able to go and do more shows in that area and build themselves in that area, probably, you know, a better area scary than a lot of other bands. If you were starting out in somewhere, you know, in deepest, darkest Cornwall, probably be a bit harder, but this is...
Yeah.
That's a, you know, home of as I say, venues like Rock's, you know, Rock City or, you know...
Yeah, the Rock House, I believe they were there a few weeks ago, actually.
Okay.
I'm hoping at some point to go and see them live, I will say that. So, what we're going to do, you picked All For You. Is that the favourite track you had off
well,
of my...
To be honest, I liked a couple of the tracks, but, you know, it felt great and it was a good start. So, yeah, absolutely, you know, All For You is a cracking track.
Okay. Aphemia, then, with All For You. Okay, so that was Rammstein with Son. I have to say, love Rammstein. Got a bit of news about them, actually, which I'll talk about in a minute. Sacred Mother Tongue before that, and Mariah Rocks, who was kick-ass at Hammerfest, I have to say. Those are the tunes chosen by Seven still, so he has gone, you know, even higher in my estimation. But right now, with me on the telephone, we have Frank, lead singer from Aphemia, who was one of the bands chosen. Hello, Frank.
Hi, Rudy. How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you, lovely?
I'm doing good, all right, today, yeah.
Cool. So you heard what Seven had to say then about you before.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? What would your response to that be?
Well, my response is categorically the guy's right on every single point. I mean, you know, we've worked hard on the music in the studio. We're currently getting it mixed and mastered down in Surrey at a place called Thin Ice. A chap called Carl Groom, who's done bands such as Threshold and Dragon Force, who you'll know.
Yay!
So, yeah, hopefully we'll come back sounding great and we can actually promote the album in the months to come. So that's going to be a big effort for us, and it's really, you know, our chance to start pushing to the sort of next level as a band.
So the live, you've got to get the live gigs and keep them going.
Yeah, that's right. And on the back of that, you know, getting everybody sort of buzzed about the CDs and you know, getting the music out there.
It's harder and harder, though. It's getting harder and harder to sell the merchandise, though.
Well, it is, and there's a lot of good bands out there. I mean, we play, you know, at all these gigs, and there's just talented band after talented band. Some really good guys out there. All sort of pushing for the same market, and I mean, what we're trying to do is just bring a little sort of extra kind of new, what we think is new anyway, sound to the music, getting the electronic stuff in there, you know, because a lot of stuff is sort of treading a bit of same old ground. What we want to do is, you know, push that electronic side, get the samples in, and of course other bands have done that, but what we're trying to do is getting it in a sort of catchy
to say, I wasn't lying when I said before that song blew me away, because it did, because I can't even remember the name. Fall From Grace is one of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been playing that one, I like that one, but this one, which I hadn't really taken much notice of actually until Seven sort of mentioned it.
Well, it's actually my favourite song that we've ever done. It's one of the earliest ones I wrote.
Really?
It's one of the earliest songs that we re-recorded it, because I wanted so much to get it right. And it was born of a real sort of emotion, and it's an emotion I've come back to all the time, and it says a lot, this song. It's not what you think it is, and if you read the lyrics, if you ever get around to it, the music comes from experience, and you know, I don't believe you can sort of convince other people if you're not actually feeling the music yourself. And All For You, out of all the songs that I've got, is the one that I think is, you know, representative of the way I feel.
So you write all the lyrics yourself, then?
I write the lyrics because I have to sing them. You know, it's no good having other people writing lyrics, because you've got to think about the register, the rhythm and everything, and how your voice sounds over the music. And I've got quite a high voice, you know, with a high register. I've got to sort of push it up there, whereas a lot of other people are sort of much more comfortable singing, you know, lower notes, whereas I've got to sort of support it and give it, you know, a real scream up there at the top.
Fair dues. Anyway, I don't want to talk to you too much now, because I want to invite you back for an interview, because that was a promise as well of the bands that got chosen. I wanted to invite you back for a full-on interview, if that's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Sometime in October, I'll get my PA to speak to your PA.
Oh, yes. Well, my PA is very busy, yeah.
But thank you very much, Frank, for giving me your time.
Real honour, and thanks for playing our song on Infernal Rock. It's a good setup you have here.
Oh, they're great, aren't they? Fair play to them. Yeah. Big shout out to Dredd, because it is his empire, and you know it is cool. So fair dues to him. So I'll say goodbye, Frank. I will be in touch about an interview, though.
Awesome.
All right.
We're there.
Okay. Take care, and I'll speak to you soon.
Okay, take care.
Bye. Okay, so that was Frank. Nice dude, fair dues. Great music, nice guy. Excellent. Okay, so the second band you picked out of our submissions was Ashes of December, and you just quite rightly told me they're from Australia, Queensland. So, I mean, these are really heavy guys.
I mean, there's a lot of music in this space, and a lot of hardcore, and a lot of it doesn't really touch me or kind of connect with me. And I think with this, while there are aspects of it that I've heard before, the musicianship was something that I couldn't ignore. You know, from the first second of listening to it, it was just like, wow. That was my view of it. I just thought Green Envy Eyes, which was a track I've chosen, and a couple of the others, it was very well produced, which is, again, sometimes a lot of these acts aren't that well produced. There's just something about it. I just thought it was very, very strong, extremely heavy. Of course, it's not going to go marching into some major label. It's niche. But that said, I think there are some staunch lovers of this kind of act out there. Certainly in the UK, so I think for an Australian band, I think they'll probably find some love here. I would think people like James Sherry, who used to be at Kerrang, and I think he still freelances for them, would probably love this band. I probably think Alex at Metal Hammer would love them as well, but I just think they're very, very good. Nice to choose something from the other side of the world and that inspires and feels good in this area. So I think there's a worldwide network that loves kind of hardcore, and I think this band, they'd have no problem plugging themselves into some good deals around the world. And
they've got a few gigs lined up as well.
Yep, they're busy, obviously in Brisbane, but I guess the problem with Australia is if you're going to go and play anywhere else, it's a whopping great flight. So it's quite hard for them to,
But, I mean, does it matter how far and wide you do gigs if you're still getting a good fan base?
No, but for someone that's isolated, it's going to take them a while to get out of there, and they're going to have to plug this in. Obviously, mad as it may sound, because we're talking about a hardcore band, but there are, in places like Australia and a lot of other countries, their government is very supportive of trying to help their music get overseas.
Oh, well, that's good.
And they often help subsidise first trips so that bands come in and they play, UK music festivals and conferences, and also other international conferences. On that note, obviously, I do end up giving advice to some of those people as to some of those international bands when they come here for the various governments, which makes me sound like an old fart. But here we are. For me, that's something that's kind of been nice to do, has introduced me to a lot of bands. But for this kind of band, if I was them, I'd probably go and talk to, Trade Queensland, who cover that part of Australia, and see whether they could assist in any way as to getting them overseas. So that would be my advice to them.
Okay, great. Definitely look for an out then if you're isolated. And I think that's excellent of the government to be helping musicians in such a way.
Yeah, well, the idea is they understand that a band is a business, effectively, and especially in this kind of DIY time, and they try and say, well, look, it's your business. You're from this area, we'll try and help it generate, Australian dollars.
Excellent.
And, you go and try and find an agent in Canada or Azerbaijan or the UK and get your band over there, and that's great, it's good for
So that was Ashes of December. Now, as we're recording this, I haven't had the music, but hopefully by the show tomorrow I will. If not, I'll be directing everybody to the MySpace.
Exactly, so. And they can get scared then.
Yeah, but no, I think they're nice. I mean, I'm not a big Growler fan, but then again, I do respect the music that they've got going on as well.
Yeah, it's just a very well put together, exceptionally good quality hardcore.
Yay! Okay, so that was Ashes of December then. So the final band, and you know, you were very very good to choose three, was Inferno, and everybody's going to know that I do play their music and they are local to me, so I was really chuffed when you picked these guys. What made you pick them?
Well, because the other stuff you sent me was rubbish, and so therefore the three good ones stood out.
Oh no! God, you're harsh and brutal.
I'm just being brutal, I'm not, you know. obviously, you know, this band are together, you know, their recordings are good, and look, you know, the thing with the MySpace is it doesn't lie, you know, you kind of, if the music is awful on there, you're not going to have any friends, and the friends that you do have are going to tell you that your music's awful, or, you know, and high. So, you know, if something's of quality and it's good, well put together, you know, in its particular genre, people are going to react and respond, and that's the centre of everything. You know, one good track on a MySpace will generate world activity.
Absolutely, and I was just saying to you, I have actually seen these guys live, and I was so impressed because they just deliver on the nail. They sound exactly like they do on the MySpace page live.
Excellent. Well, you know, for me, it's got the kind of quintessentially kind of English sound. You know, it's got classic rock influences, but in a modern, you know, it's got that metal tinge as well, which really, you know, I love, you know.
Absolutely. It's just a whole mix, which I think stands out for me.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's quite a few acts kind of in this area, but, you know, again, this act is very good at what it does in that particular area, and I would think that the, you know, classic rock magazine would respond to it and react to it. Whether they'd get the support from Metal Hammer 2 is, you know, is questionable, because one tends to try and cover what the other doesn't, but that's not to say the other doesn't really like this area, because you know, I know the guys that really love their, you know, love their kind of more classically tinged rock as well. But for me, yeah, it, you know, very well put together. Again, the guitar work, and probably being a bad and failed guitarist in my youth, I listen to these things, and guitars mean a lot, but the guitar work is, you know, is quality, really.
Excellent. I mean, is the scope for the local bands that, you know, you think have got potential to be invited to go to the Hammerfest and Hard Rock Hell?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, Hard Rock Hell, which would probably suit this band more, is fully booked for this year, so it's a bit hard for them. You know, I think what bands forget is, you know, when you're booking festivals now, because we're in this sort of, we'll talk about it in more detail, but because we're in basically a recessed market where if someone's spending some money on a concert ticket, you know, they want it to be a great event. And
absolutely.
Because of so many festivals going bust and having a bad time, you know, very conscious of booking these things much earlier in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore having... hello, who's popular? And therefore having time to be able to promote these things properly.
Yeah.
You know, which helps the band. You know, a band, if we're putting a band on at one of those festivals and we're announcing it, you know, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months in advance, and they're on there for a long time, that's an enormous amount of PR for it. And it
absolutely
really is advice that bands should take heed of, because the earlier that they put their shows in, if they put a show in 3 or 4 months in advance, the working of that show is a lot easier than if they bang a show in next week at the Dog and Duck, and then one person and the duck show up. You know, you've got to promote something, do it properly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of promoting, and you have to do things properly, because it's no good shouting out from the rooftops if you can't get anybody to listen.
Exactly. So, you know, obviously putting gigs in is one thing, and you can't always be fussy, and for a band like this, they've got to play. Again, looking at it, I'm just looking for shows on their site, and they seem to be a bit scarce, whether that's just a...
I can tell you why. They are writing to prepare a new album at the moment.
Fantastic. So the check is in the post from the band yourself there.
Unfortunately, I wish, but I know that they decided the first few months of this year they wanted to focus on an album.
I think that obviously making an album and getting it out, you know, like other bands, that, you know, the Voodoo Johnsons of this world, who are, you know, not a million miles away with great guitarists and putting tracks out themselves and being brave and going with it, I think is the way forward. And there's a whole array of acts like this that I think are fantastic ambassadors for British rock music, and the rest of the world would actually love them.
Yeah,
I still think America has a love of great, to you know, great British tinged rock music, and my advice would be, don't just spend your life trying to work your band in the UK, try and get it out to America and to some American radio stations. And you know, while we might have one radio station here nationally that doesn't really like playing rock music, you know, America has hundreds that absolutely adore playing rock music, or British rock music. So you know, and sometimes building your story over there and bringing it back is no bad thing. So whatever they can do, and again, it's a big wide world, and it all plugs into MySpace, or it plugs into the web, so it's so much easier to get your music out there. I think the thing is to release records, get them out by hook or crook, and just tour them and play them and build it up onwards and upwards.
Yeah.
Don't wait on anyone, don't rely on anyone other than yourself.
Well, that's it, because you can only rely on yourself at the end of the day, I think, can't you?
Exactly.
So, those are the three bands. If you had to pick one, which one would you pick?
To be controversial, I think I'm going to go with Brisbane today.
Really? Ashes of December, huh?
Yeah, I think because, you know, out of the three... it's probably just because I'd never normally go for a band like this.
Right, and yeah, and what I've picked up from you is that you go for the completely different.
And maybe it's the day, and the beauty of music is it's what you're listening to at a given moment in time, and with this particular act, you know, I just think it was so well put together. I think, you know, the first act, you know, was very innovative and modern. The second act was just phenomenally well put together in its own particular space, and again, I mean, all three were outstanding, which is great, and you know, hats off for all of those bands for getting in touch. You know, I think it's obviously always about the follow on and doing things, and you know, the band from Brisbane, it's easy to tell them that they should contact their, you know, contact Trade Queensland to try and get some support there. The you know, the last band, obviously it's more about gigging and building it.
Yeah.
A bit like the first, really, building it in their area and driving it out of that. There are obviously labels that are putting stuff out in that area. You know, there are the sort of Transcend Records and the Demolition Records, kind of one leans more towards classic and one leans more towards metal, and slightly smaller sort of British labels that are releasing those kind of acts. So it's hard to give as much as I'd like to give in the course of a quick interview, but you know, certainly they should hit up some of those labels as well, but carry on doing things themselves in the interim, because it's a reactive industry, and proactivity causes reactivity. So the more they do, these bands do for themselves, the more labels around the world and radio stations and everyone else is going to respond.
Excellent. So the third one was Inferno, and you chose the Suicide Pact, so that is what we shall play right now.
Fantastic.
But I just think the start of El Toro for me is just super kick-ass, so there we go. Before that, you also heard the other band that submitted music, Femia, like that track as well. Didn't manage to get a track off Ashes to December, but did manage to get Joe from Inferno on the telephone.
Hello.
How are you doing, Joe?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Thank you for giving up your time. I know you're busy writing at the moment, so I do appreciate you taking time out.
It's quite all right.
We do need a break, you know. Don't overdo it. I worry about you, you know.
Okay.
Okay, so you heard Seven's advice before. Have you had a chat about it with the other guys? What are your thoughts on what he said?
We thought he made perfect sense, really. It's quite sound advice. We're definitely going to take on board some of it.
Yeah, so you're writing now. So obviously, when are you hoping to finish this album?
We will be finished before the end of the year, and it should be out probably early next year, in time for the new year.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that lots.
That's the plan anyway.
Yeah, that's the plan, but you know, life does take over sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
Unfortunately. So, next year you're going to apply to go on the Hammerfest or the Hard Rock Hell then?
Yeah, definitely, we'll be applying for everywhere. We'll be in your face everywhere.
I hope so, because I really did mean what I said when I stuck up for you then. Yeah, you can send me the check in the post if you like. No, I'm only joking. You know, I did come to see you live. I do try and see the bands that, you know, I promote live, and you were kick-ass. You just totally delivered. It was good. You were so tight together. I suppose that's because you've been playing so long, isn't it, together?
Yeah, we've been together quite a while, so we're kind of veterans, if you know what I mean.
Veterans at such a young age.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. We're quite young, but we've still been doing it a long time.
Yeah, you have, in all fairness. Well, guys, I hope you'll come back, and I've already interviewed you once, and you've been on a couple of times, but I'd love to interview you again for those that haven't heard about you, and, you know, that was the promise I would interview, and I give you airplay anyway, so, you know, that's the kind of thing we promise. So
okay.
If you'll come back, hopefully, in October.
Yeah, definitely.
Joe, thank you very much. It was nice to talk to you. Take care.
And you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
So there we go. Oh, bless his little constructs. Isn't he lovely? He's lovely. Yes, that's Joe. And I did mean what I said. I'm not just kissing butt there. As lovely as they are sound musicians. Great lads. And their MySpace, obviously you can come here and request their tunes, but their MySpace is myspace.com/InfernoRockBand. So do go and check those out, add them, say hello, tell them who sent you. The other two bands were Athemia, and I absolutely love that track All For You. I'm more focused on the other two, and only just sort of got this one for the show, and this one absolutely blew me away, I have to say. MySpace.com, My Athemia, MyAPHEMIA, and hopefully we'll have Frank from Athemia on the telephone later. Hopefully. And the other one, they're in Australia, I guess it's a time zone thing. MySpace.com/AshesOfDecemberBand. Heavy, growling, like the tune, kick ass. But that was the whole package one that Seven talked about. So go and check all the bands out. Please do support them. That's what it's all about. Oh yeah. Okay. What else have we got going on? We've got loads of people in the chat room. Do come and say hello. www.infernalrockradio.com. The time is coming up 8:45 in the UK, which means it's what? 4:15 along the East Coast of America. So, what can I say? Not a lot, actually. Right, what have we got coming up? We've got some more tunes coming up that Seven has chosen. Got some more kick-ass new master mixes, both from Skindred this time. Love them. Gotta remember to talk at the end of them. Bless me. Anyway, Infernal Rock Radio, a station built by the bands, for the bands. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. Like I said, in the chat room, we've got Wolfric, Six Man, Irish Jenny, Zofo, Uzi, Averia, Dread, Corn, Holio, Lady J, Haiti, Mr. Chaos, Blonde, Frank, Savachick, who's listening, and Nomad, and anybody else out there that's tuned in, thank you so much for giving up your time. You do truly kick ass. Dual Throne, my arch nemesis, is listening in the background as well. And why is he my arch nemesis? I tell you, because he slates Sepultura sometimes. So we can't have that. So everybody needs to kick off when they see him. Dual Throne. Check out his MySpace. Telling you. Right. Let's get back to the tunes. Thank you for tuning in. Anybody that wants to give feedback on tonight, you can do it through. You can go to 7pmmanagement.co.uk and submit your emails to 7 or submit emails to me, mooney_tunes@hotmail.co.uk. You can submit them to the station at promo@infernalrockradio.com. Please don't tell me to get off the air though, because I will be upset. I am quite emotional sometimes. But hey, what can I say? It's Friday, it's Freaky Friday, it is Infernal Rock Radio. Turn it up, folks! What can I say? Go check out the MySpaces. I will give them out to you again, people, if I can find them. Yeah. Aphemia was www.myspace.com/myaphemia. MyaphemiA. Second band, Inferno. www.myspace.com/InfernoRockBand. InFerno Rock Band. And Ashes of December. www.myspace.com/AshesofDecemberBand. Go check them out. Check out their songs. Leave them feedback. Buy their music. Go support them, folks. What else have I got to tell you? Not an awful lot. Apart from, got some more kickoff tunes, got a bit more to talk to 7 about. He's going to tell us a little bit about the festivals and stuff now he organises. So, I think I should shut up and let you listen to that, because it's much more interesting than I am. So, pin your ears back and listen to this. Another one of your many, many talents, dear, is organising and booking for festivals. Tell me about that.
It was a bit of an accident. I guess I was kind of winding down one of my publishing companies, because my business partner had kind of, decided that, he was wanted to become a full-time dad and didn't need to work, really, because, because he was extremely well-to-do, shall we say. And as a result, it was like, I wanted to rebuild my management roster, but with management, you might not find a good act for 2 years. So rather than being the management roster with nothing, I always entertain a few stray phone calls, and I got a phone call saying, hey, I'm putting together a rock festival. I don't have a headline act, and I need one in a week.
Help.
If I don't find that act, it's not going to happen. Can you help? And I went, yeah, sure. and started calling people up and found them Twisted Sister, and that was Hard Rock Hell 1.
Excellent.
And then I was meeting Tesla for Fish and Chips, so, in Brighton, which was funny. So I roped them in, and then we kind of built a festival from there, really. And that was great fun, and I loved it. And when I got down there, I just thought the crowd was awesome. I absolutely loved working with John Davis, who I worked with on it.
He's lovely. I've had him on the show a few times around Hammerfest time and after as well, and he is just a genuine down-to-earth guy.
Well, that's the thing, and, in the music industry, there's a lot of non-genuine, non-down-to-earth people, so it was a breath of fresh air, and we hit it off, and we've since worked on a whole stack of nonsense. Obviously, the beauty of that was one thing leads to another. All the support that Classic Rock magazine gave as a sort of media partner in it led to, them saying, well, our other title, Metal Hammer, wants to do something, and Hammerfest was born. And again, the privilege of being involved in that has been wonderful, really. So booking Hammerfest and working with Alex and Gil, who are both absolutely top-notch people, has been a joy as well. So obviously I'm in the throes of booking Hammerfest 2, and I've obviously booked Hard Rock Hell 3, and so it's like what movies, and it's like Halloween 5, I'm kind of absolutely loving that, and that was basically how it all started. And then from there, I think, God, in the last year I've ended up booking about 7 and you know, it sort of self-perpetuated, as I said, the booking a science fiction convention for SF magazine, and which I guess is just a magazine of Metal Hammer and classic rock, and run by the same publishing company. So, you know, not only do I get to book great metal and great rock music, I get to book the cast of Torchwood.
Excellent.
So it's that on its own is a funny part. Today I've been booking a festival in New Delhi in India, which has been...
Yeah, you mentioned that. What's that all about?
Again, you know, I met someone, we chatted about a band I managed that we're talking about later, so I won't talk too much about them now. And as a result, they loved them and wanted to get them to India. They realised that aside of managing them, I also did what I do, and asked whether I would get involved with this festival in New Delhi. And it was a traditional, it was a kind of Indian music, you know, domestic artists festival last year, and this year it kind of got funding and is growing, and the first day it's kind of got metal and rock, and therefore, you know, we're sending a few acts out there, not loads, but, you know, a handful of metal and rock on the first day, and then a bit of blues on the second day, and a few other stray bits and pieces, a couple of DJs, and, you know, and I've rounded some total of the Arts Festival, so that's been a bit of a privilege, and I'm knee-deep in that as we speak.
Excellent. Well, if you need anyone to carry your luggage, you know where to go.
Well, I believe there's quite a lot of people ready to carry that.
So, well, that's amazing, I have to say. And yeah, were you at Hammerfest this year?
That's going to sound really embarrassing. Thanks for embarrassing me on air after booking it. No, I also work on I also do some work for a music conference called Muse Expo.
Right.
In LA.
Yeah.
On the same days as Hammerfest.
Oh, that's
it. Being a kind of, for want of a more terrible title, a kind of ambassador for that, it was kind of, okay, which do I do? Whereas I'm not going to have that problem this year where I have a clash. I'm sure there's a song called 2/7 Clash or something, but festival clash. So inevitably I ended up having to be at the wrong place at the right time, which is thoroughly depressing, especially since, you know, the band that I'm managing were playing there.
Oh, yeah, well, it was an excellent time. So,
I got continuous feeds as I was in, you know, downtown LA, coming to me from the UK, said, this band were amazing, that band were rubbish, this were great. So, no, there's no way I am missing that festival this year, and the two things are running on at different times. So,
excellent.
That's, you know, I always wanted Hammerfest to be kind of slightly earlier, and it is this year, it's in March, so it's going to be for me, that means no clashes with summer festivals and exclusivity on bands that can't play at summer festivals. So, really looking forward to it.
Excellent, me too. I really am after last year because it was just amazing. So that's the festival spiel. We'll play some tunes and then we'll come back after. So we were just talking about Hammerfest, and I have to say the highlight for me and everybody else that I know that went to Hammerfest were the appearance by Skindred, and I was bowled over before their appearance anyway because I was so lucky to have interviewed Benji, who was just lovely.
He's a top banana, really, isn't he?
Isn't he just so down to earth? We had a laugh. I was laughing trying to interview. I couldn't interview him properly because he was just making me laugh.
You know, they're ambassadors for themselves, and you know, when you meet someone as humble as that, you know, with music, it makes music that you love. I mean, I just, you know, fan. That's what proper fans and bands are about. People really love that band. And they love, you know, them as people. You know, they're so warm. That's the kind of bands that I want to work with, people I can work with. I can have a warm, good old time with that are respectful of anything that you do, and also I'm respectful of the music and what they do, and it's just fantastic. You know, I'm just delighted to be working with that band. So
how did it come about, Seven?
There's always some randomness. Obviously, apart from booking them and talking to them on that level, a mutual friend from Pitch Shifter had mentioned to me and mentioned to them, you know, I guess it mentioned to me that they were looking for someone and thought they really needed someone. And, you know, thank him for, because it was absolutely great that he did. And we started talking, and obviously they're on tour with, you know, everybody under the sun in America for a very long time. So we were swapping calls and emails, and I was giving advice anyway, as you do. And building a relationship, which is kind of what it's about. If you go into managing something, you want to know that you both get on and you trust these people.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, structuring something with the, you know, their American management that works, and you know, letting them know that, you know, you took it as seriously as they took it and believed in it as seriously as they believed in it, and really felt there's an opportunity to accelerate that career. And I'm made up, you know. It's nice to see the new video getting going on playlist today, and all sorts of things happening, and you know, I'm really enjoying it. I just think they're a really special band that, you know, I'm watching at Sonosphere. I think for me was, they treated it like it was playing in their back room, you know.
Yeah.
Benji with the whole crowd was like, everyone in that place was his best mate. And
he's, I mean, that's the one thing we all picked up on at Hammerfest. He just got everybody involved.
Yep.
No exceptions. Everyone was up there absolutely giving it their all. I was so impressed.
I haven't seen many people do that at all. When, you know.
No, in the music industry, you don't tend to get absolute showmen.
No, you just don't see it. And I'm just amazed that this band, you know, has not had anyone come and go, come on, guys, look at this. And to be honest, they just kept on doing what they do and gone from gig to gig, doing exactly what we've just been talking about. And it's so great to see. And to be honest, it's a sort of, as I say, it's an absolute, again, privilege to be working with a band that was great and with a frontman that is one of the best frontmen I've seen in my life.
Do you think they've been overlooked in the UK?
Hugely. And also, you know, overlooked and, you know, which is today, they've almost seen as a new band by people now, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
They've done that whole thing where they've worked for, you know, 10 years solidly, you know, grafting away and built it right from the underground up. And now it's like people are like discovering them and going, wow. And fantastic to see. And I think it's a very bright future for that band.
Absolutely. They've got a tour coming up, haven't they?
They've got a tour coming up, which is, you know, I think London's about to sell out in the next day or two, so grab your tickets. If it doesn't happen by next week, you won't be able to get into London.
Manchester's been upgraded now as well, hasn't it?
They're both being upgraded. So those two are going in the right direction, and some of the other shows look like they're going to sell out very shortly too. So I think that's really good. And, yeah, I'm, as you said, I'm sort of excited by the whole thing. It's just needed to be worked. It needed for someone to join the dots and go, come on, and really shine a light on them. And I think
absolutely,
I can live up to that role.
I'm sure you will, and I think it's going to be a match made in heaven, actually, because obviously interviewing you and listening and talking to you like we have done, because obviously you get to know people before you do things, and your ability to pick out the weird and the wonderful and make it happen is just astounding. And I think that's what you're going to do with Skindred.
Probably being weird and wonderful myself. Weird, I don't know how wonderful, but they're certainly wonderful. And, you know, what can I say? That's just something that, you know, you're not going to find anyone enthused about more than me. I think if you're standing in a room while they're playing, it's very hard not to move.
And oh, God, yeah. I defy anybody to stand still. I really do.
Watching that Sonosphere crowd, you know, it was a bit like the Madness thing in Finsbury Park where it caused an earthquake. I think it was that kind of...
Fantastic. So we're going to sandwich this talk with a couple of severe hot-off-the-press tunes.
Exactly. A couple of tracks from their new album, Shark Bites and Dog Fights, which is, you know, aptly named because it was meant to be a ferocious title, and some of the tracks are meant to be ferocious in their madness, really, which... you know, I'll let the music do the talking.
Yeah, so we've got Invincible, and Stand for Something, which will sandwich this little talk in quite nicely.
Exactly, Stand for Something is the single, and Invincible will probably be its first play on radio. So, you know, there we
go. Well, I'm sure they'll enjoy that.
Exactly.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that was Seven Webster talking about the Skindred management, and enjoy the tunes. So the final part of our spiel, which I think we've probably pretty much filled the whole show, actually, that's a good thing, We were originally going to do something every month from today, but I know I have commitments that's going to postpone us actually getting back together till January. But we were just saying, I don't think that's a bad thing because we can gauge the reaction from this one.
Yep.
Get feedback from the new bands. And maybe hopefully in January, you were just saying to try and focus on the new bands.
I think that's a plan. It's a new music show, and to support new music, which is something that's kind of close to both of our hearts. And look, you know, if there are new acts out there that, you know, want to play Hammerfest or Hard Rock Hell Festival, then, you know, we're always looking. Obviously, with anything that I book, it's not just about me. It's not about an ego. It's about the other people involved with that. But certainly, if there are acts that I feel come through this show that I feel that, you know, fit, then I'm certainly going to present them to any of the festivals that I'm working on. So,
and I think the type of person that you are as well, if there's somebody astounding that comes along, you're going to do what you can to help them.
Exactly. Well, that's the point, isn't it? That's the point of doing it. You know, it's to turn around and go, well, look, what is going to help this act? You know, we've mentioned the Brisbane band and what I think they should do, and we've mentioned some other bits and pieces, but effectively, you know, for new bands getting out there, you know, it's about driving their career forwards and playing as many shows. And obviously, I work on some good, great shows to be able to help showcase those acts. And you know, as long as the kind of, you know, obviously Hammerfest is booked by myself with the support of the whole editorial team at Metal Hammer, and that's crucial. Otherwise, it'd be Seven Fest, and that wouldn't be right, you know.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
I don't know whether anyone would show up, and I wouldn't want to be Johnny No Mates. But I think it's everything that you work on, it's very much about a team and having the involvement of the team. And Hard Rock Hell is very much, you know, myself, John Davis, and getting lots of input from all around us, especially, you know, the classic rock side of things.
Excellent. Well, I can only look forward to January, and I look forward to talking to you and giving you the feedback from today, not just from the new bands, but from the listeners as well.
Don't have him on again. He went with Dino.
Stay away. Burn him at the stake.
He chose a hardcore track. What are we doing?
Excellent. Seven, how can people get in touch with you?
Very easy. Either a MySpace, MySpace/7PM Management is pretty easy. There's a 7pm management website for those that want to send rude messages, and you know, both are pretty easy to find, so that 7pm, like the time management, either the website or the MySpace.
Well, Seven, I can only just say thank you on behalf not only of myself, because I'm really honoured that, you know, you agreed to do this, but for everybody out there that's listening and that you are helping. And everybody at Infernal Rock Radio as well would like to extend a thank you for giving up your time, because I know you charge heftily normally for this kind of thing.
Oh, of course, but then, you know, it's the alcohol show, so let's get, you know, let's crack the drinks.
Yeah, let's get trolleyed. It's got to be Jaeger time. Throughout this show, I'll also be dropping Jaeger bombs and things like that, so it's going to be
exactly
good. I do look forward to having you back in January, if not before. And let's try and make this work for them.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Seven, thank you so very much.
All right, thank you.